11:50 a.m. 88.5 FM. Don't you worry about
a thing. Jesus Christ is still the King. Welcome to the Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher on Iowa Catholic Radio. Every Wednesday, diving deep in the truth of the Catholic Church and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from the Mercy Live Up Studio.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
I'm Dr. Bud Maher.
We are coming to you live from Des Moines, Iowa, where it has rained 400 of the 365 days a year. Mercy Live Up Studio, where there is not rain, so I can't complain. Iowa Catholic Radio, 11:50 a.m., 88.5 FM, 94.5 FM, streaming live, iowacatholicradio.com. And if you have the Iowa Catholic Radio app from Blessman Ministries and the People's Abstract Company, you can listen to us darn tootin' nearly anywhere. So other than a summer cold, Bud, how are you doing?
Doing pretty well. The daughters have VBS this week, Vacation Bible School, so they've been going to All Saints Catholic Church, and Mandy DeVries does a great job over there. I know for Rachel, it's a real respite to, you know, have a quieter house for 5 days.
Mandy DeVries is one of the more positive people who really believe in humanity. So anytime my kids get to hear from her, they're like, that's vastly different than what Dad says about people.
A little bit of hope in their life. Yeah, talk to Mandy DeVries.
Yeah, if you want hope in your children's lives, Mandy DeVries is a wonderful person to talk to. Yeah, I think it's St. Augustine's that has Totus Tuus.
Yeah.
And my kids got really used to Totus Tuus because it started in Wichita Diocese and has actually kind of been going around the nation. So I think we're going to go, throw the kiddos on some of those groups when that comes
up. Oh, wow. So Totus Tuus is at St. Augustine's. My 10-year-old walked out today with a Totus Tuus shirt on.
Oh, maybe.
So I hope All Saints doesn't see that as like shots fired or
VBS versus Totus Tuus.
We'll see how this one goes.
That's right. By the way, some of the best fights are small ball fights that only Catholics can understand. I like when people are like, "Oh, you're a Totus Tuuser."
Yeah.
You're like, "That's not how the verb works." Anyway.
So you've been learning sacred scripture at St. Augustine's. I see how this goes. Traitor.
Traitor. That's like, oh, focus missionary, huh? What do you think about Newman Centers? We've really just lost about half the audience. As always, brought to you by the show's underwritten by Mercy College of Health Sciences. We really are deep into rolling through the summer semester. You can always start to tell when you have classes that you teach very frequently, like Bud and I teaching servant leadership, that you start having watermarks that make you know that it's not a new class anymore. So we just showed them the movie we show every semester, that if that disc ever got broke, you and I could probably act it for people.
Oh, that's true.
But then we got readings coming up. And I think sometimes people, there's a way in which teaching could be very boring if like all you did was read off the same notes. But when you get a chance to read the same people over and over again, it's like getting to have a conversation partner across the ages or across time and space. And one of the best things about teaching is getting to learn something new about a text that you've taught thousands of times. And really, it's the students that bring out stuff that you never would have saw before. And so, I don't know, I just very thankful about week five that we're in. Week five is always when I'm really thankful that we have new students every year to show us new aspects of what we're talking about.
Well, I know in the introduction to philosophy course, we're teaching Boethius tomorrow, and that text is near and dear to your heart.
Right, because my first name's in it. I'm kidding.
Is Bo short for Boethius?
No, yeah, I get that one a lot, and I'm like, I'm from Oklahoma. Absolutely not. That is not where my name came from. Bocephus, Hank Williams Jr. would be closer, even though that's not where my name came from. But yeah, so Mercy College in the middle of it all, and feel very gracious, a lot of gratitude to be able to do so. Also brought to you, as always, underwritten by Cartridge World.
Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great. It's perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers.
801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400. Online, cartridgeworld.com.
Cartridge World is the place to go.
For your printer, cartridge needs.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, like if you're looking for tacos, I don't think they have tacos at Cartridge World. We could always ask.
We haven't done a taco show yet, but this is a good town for tacos.
I know. We do need to do... We have an hour and 10 minutes, so we really might just need to do food reviews at this point. I don't know what it has to do with the common good.
But... There's a great moments in church history, and it's all about tacos, and all the listeners are confused.
Great moments in church history. Taco edition. Today, not tacos, but someone almost as good, bud. Timothy O'Malley. I mean, I really like a good taco, but I enjoy talking to Timothy O'Malley, too.
Tim O'Malley's a good friend of ours. We've rubbed shoulders with him at a couple conferences, written some wonderful stuff on the liturgy, on evangelization, so I'm really looking forward to this one.
So he actually was in Poland. You know, one of the nice things about Facebook that's also anxiety-inducing is you get to see where your radio guests coming up are currently, and he was in Poland, and I was kind of worried that maybe he wouldn't even make it, but he did. So we'll see if he's still on Polish time, and do you know any good old Polish slang to throw his way?
I don't. That's unfortunate. I did see he was using the emoticons yesterday, emoticons on Facebook, to visually describe the trip back from Poland.
Uh-huh.
Like, I think he went from Poland to South Bend yesterday.
Wow.
And it was like car, train, bus, plane, train, car, some order.
I don't feel that since, like, horse and buggy wasn't in there, it's just not impressive, really. Like, if horseback...
Hop on a pony and come back to
me. Hop on a pony to get to the plane. Oh, and by the way, we're getting text messages in from our good friend Justin White. Shout out to Justin and his new job down at the Diocese. He's throwing down that tamales industry has the best tacos around. So, but what we really need to do is get taco places competing to get mentioned on our show so that we get free tacos.
Well, and I feel like we could have Justin on to talk about either tamales or tacos. He's involved in youth ministry for the diocese, so that's part of the new evangelization, I'm sure.
So Justin White, open request. If you bring tacos on the show, you can come talk anytime you want to.
You can talk about your ministry, too.
Yeah. I mean, you can bring that up, too. That's fine. So Dr. Timothy O'Malley, man, I'm always impressed to rattle off. I mean, he's director of the Liturgy Institute of the McGrath Institute at Notre Dame. Like I said, he's written more books than we have. Probably better looking.
Oh, for sure.
So, I mean, it's quite an honor to get to have him on the show.
He helps edit the Church Life Journal, right?
Yes.
And you've written for that?
I have. I got the opportunity. One of the sort of modified talks that I gave at the Faith Journey, so shout out to John Wynn, who's in Florida right now. One of the talks for Faith Journey, I got to sort of adapt it to an essay, and they were kind enough to publish it. So that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, you've been, whoa.
Summer cold attacks.
When I get a cold, unfortunately, I don't go to like James Earl Jones' voice. It becomes squeaky teenager.
It's very, a vital show now. It feels youthful.
No, shout out to you. You've had some nice little pieces out there lately. I recently read your piece on the death of Brian Doyle and the Ascension. So if you Google Bo Bonner, Brian Doyle, Ascension, he's got a nice reflection on the recent feast that we've celebrated, the Feast of the Ascension.
Oh, thank you. And just since we're throwing out lauds everywhere, when's your book coming out, man?
So I was talking to the editor recently, and they've pushed it back a little bit. We were hoping for the end of this year, but it will be 2018.
But like movie rights coming soon, right?
I hope so.
Yeah. Animated or Brad Pitt playing John Henry Newman?
This is interesting. So the book's about Blessed John Henry Newman. I'm trying to think what actor would play Newman. I'll have to think about that one for a while.
Gabriel Burns, maybe.
That'd be awesome.
All right. Well, Deacon Tony, everybody else, anybody else got accolades that we need to bring up? When's your book coming out, Deacon Tony?
It's been out. Nobody knows about it, though.
You have a... What's it about? Is it about your band days?
It's a very short story, I'll tell you that. Yeah.
You were in a band?
He's in several bands. He's in one now.
Big time. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think you might have heard of Jethro Tull. No, I was kidding.
Well, I don't want to take you away from your main...
It's the Uncommon Band.
He plays during spin classes. You're doing spin class and playing bass.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
But you play bass, right?
Oh, I play guitar badly.
Okay.
He's a pro.
I'm trying to think of a band that we could form.
I know. It could be subpar, but a lot of fun.
I'll play the cowbell.
We're good to go. Well, folks, we'll be back in a minute, not with a band, but with something much better. Dr. Timothy O'Malley, stick around. We'll be back in a minute.
Iowa Catholic Radio is looking for volunteers. Would you like to be part of our Christ-centered environment that is spreading the Word of God? Iowa Catholic Radio annually hosts over a dozen events of all sizes. Each event has a different volunteer opportunities, from answering phones to registration of event attendees and more. You can volunteer for a single event or multiple events throughout the year. Call us now at 515-223-1150 or email us at contact@kwky.com.
Announcing the new Strongman Day event Saturday, June 24th, being held at Camp Dodge Historic Pool Pavilion. All men, young and old, will just love this. A new type of fellowship in physical and spiritual strengths to be challenged. This will be fun. A unique blend of competition and conference. Compelling national and local speakers will focus on improving both aspects of body and soul. Register competitive or non-competitive. Buy a ticket to give to a younger man. Let's reach more men for Christ. Go to iowacatholicradio.com to register and download the flyer.
We are back with the Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. We have with us on the line Dr. Timothy O'Malley, director of the Notre Dame Center for Liturgy and the McGrath Institute for Church Life. He teaches in the Department of Theology at the University of Notre Dame. His research areas are liturgy, catechesis, Christian spirituality. His new book is Born Again Catholic. He has been in Poland. He is back in the United States. And what I mean, basically, first thing, Bud, after seeing his family, is on our show. So, Tim, how are you doing, buddy?
It is a delight to be with you this morning. It's 1:42 in Poland.
So you're after? Yeah, okay. So jet lag wise, this is perfect.
It's great.
I was worried that maybe throwing down the 8:40 gauntlet after your grand journey would be problematic, but it sounds like that it's really just the perfect time to get you on here.
Yeah, I was available starting at 4 a.m. this morning if you had wanted to talk.
I think they've moved us to an hour and 10. I don't think they want us to start out at the 4 a.m. shift quite yet.
No, not yet. Not yet. Soon.
Soon. So I know that you have a new book, Born Again Catholic. We wanted to talk about evangelization in America and all these things. But first, we kept telling people you've been at Poland, so I don't know how much you want to talk about the conference you were at or stuff like that. But yeah, so how was it like to journey over to Poland, see the sights, and be a part of a conference over there?
Yeah, I was actually in Poland for a conference that was themed, that was linked to my first book, Liturgy and the New Evangelization. And the Polish people and Polish theologians are particularly attracted to figuring out what the new evangelization consists of. So I was over there along with Professor David Fagerberg to give a talk on liturgy and the new evangelization. We spoke in English and had able translators. And then the conference continued in Lublin, where at the Catholic Institute there, the Institut Catholic of John Paul II, where he taught. So it was a sort of stunning place to be there, and also to be there, I should say, on the anniversary, the 30th anniversary of his visit back when he first became Pope. So we did that and then went to Warsaw and Gdańsk and other places. And it was really a stunning place to see Polish Catholicism, which is devotional and liturgical and faithful, but not weird. It's a really a stunning version of Catholicism.
Not weird. That's why I signed on the dotted line, man.
Then I think you'd feel uncomfortable in Poland.
that's perfect. So wait, one last practical question then. Did you have a translator when you were listening to everybody else?
We did. We had a student there who studied English literature. And so she was Polish and helped translate things for us as we were listening to the talks live and as they were sort of unfolding. So it was very, very nice. I mean, I think that everything she said was true. There's no way for me to know.
Yeah, that's always the problem with translation, especially if someone's talking about you. I'm sure the translator always feels compelled to softball that. So, no, but okay, so actual practical questions. We were emailing across the interwebs, across ocean distances. And you said, hey, let's talk about American evangelization, and I'm guessing maybe how that differs from what you're speaking about with Poland. For me, I think it's interesting coming from evangelicalism, which, of course, takes that as its name. So the idea is it's bread and butter, is the evangelical aspect of things, and then becoming Catholic. I think even Catholicism, there's a deep-seated American individualism when it comes to evangelization, and I'm sure that that is remarkably different than European countries. I was wondering, Tim, if that's sort of the direction you were going, or if there's a different direction you wanted to go, just let me know.
No, that's exactly right. Yeah, I being in Poland made me think a lot about it, because actually they're in the middle of trying to make a decision between what actually constitutes evangelization. Whereas in the U.S., it does have a kind of evangelical zeal. And to me, at least, sometimes it's a bit too evangelical in the sense of individualistic, a sense of evangelization as converting the individual to Jesus Christ and that alone. In Polish Catholicism, there is a risk of this, too, but it's linked more with the movements. So Communion and Liberation and other kind of movements, there's a variety of movements around the family, and that there's always a kind of danger here in Polish Catholicism, too, of this individualism winning out over a renewal of the church, a renewal of society. It is a bit, you can kind of see that the Poles are having the exact same fight that we did, or that we are, and functionally in the U.S. church. Is evangelization about an individual conversion to Jesus Christ alone, or is it actually a renewal of culture, a renewal of the liturgy, a renewal of life itself? And I would say it's probably both. It's always interesting to go international, because you really learn to figure out, like, oh, well, this is, functionally, this is what's happening in the rest of the world, and it's not so different than what's happening here.
Tim, this is Bun Mar. I got a sense from when you were commenting on Polish Catholicism and what you experienced over there that they, I don't know, maybe I was reading into it, that they do liturgy in some ways better. And you've written a lot on the role of liturgy in relation to the new evangelization. I mean, what was the liturgical life over there? What things stood out to you?
The biggest thing that stood out to me is this mix of devotion and liturgical life that's perfectly united together, and not in a way that fights. Kneeling happens in a really kind of organic, beautiful way in the Eucharist. The images of the Blessed Virgin Mary, of Divine Mercy, of Our Lady of Czechova, all these images really kind of mediate a love. There's silence in the liturgy. They actually have an official hymnal where they use the introits for the day, but they sing them in a sort of Polish hymnody. There's a way in which they haven't had the liturgical wars or fights that we have, and that there's a real sense of devotion at the liturgy, that it's a sacred act. Many of their spaces are actually relatively new. I mean, this is so many of their churches were destroyed during the Second World War, and a lot of them are rather modern. Yet there's a kind of devotional life that undergirds the liturgical life that I feel American Catholicism lost after the Second Vatican Council. Too often, liturgy alone was understood as what was important, rather than as part of a holistic devotional life. And I could see that in Polish Catholicism. It really is a kind of holistic way of life.
Well, Tim, I think it's interesting for, like you said, the one benefit everybody can always have from going to a different place than where they live is to sort of jumble their mind and let them see sort of grooves and warp and weft in a different way for the setting they're in. And when it comes to liturgical life, like you said, we can think of it in such antagonistic terms based on what's going on in the United States, and that's it. So it's interesting to think about Poland, where multiple factors are sort of going on historically at the same time. So like you said, World War II, I mean, Warsaw was something like 85% destroyed. Most of the Polish cities faced similar devastation. They were conquered immediately twice, once by the Nazis, then by the Soviets. They had to deal with communism. And so there's a way in which Poland, of course, has this ancient Catholicism, this very unique Christianity that's really a bridge between East and West, but then also had because of communism, a sort of reset button that has really, within living memory, all been pressed. And so it seems to me that why Poland would stick out to people as a good way to think about these things is it's a lot of history compressed, so to speak, in the last few decades that really make people ask questions. So there's a strange way in which the United States and Poland, I think, can really look at each other and ask similar questions because our Catholicism is obviously very young, while as theirs is young sort of by historical accident.
Yeah, it's a really nice point. Yeah, their history, you walk in and the history feels different because when you go to, you know, the United Kingdom, you're talking about, well, here is where, you know, Bede the Venerable walked. But in Poland, it's actually everywhere you go is here's where St. John Paul II walked. And it's very moving to just see that the way that the church has had such a role in society, the way that the church has integrated itself fully within social life, partially because of the persecutions that they endured, but partially because of the power of Catholicism to renew a society. You can see it in the Solidarity Movement. We went to the museum, and the Solidarity Movement, there's videos showing, you know, mass being celebrated at the shipyards, and you know, there's always a danger in these sort of masses of them turning into kind of protest movements, but they weren't protest movements. People were going to confession. They were silent before the Eucharist. There's a real sense of the power of the gospel to transform a land. And to that degree, I think Polish Catholicism really does offer us a possibility of an integrated approach to Catholic social thought that's linked to devotional life, that's linked to liturgical life, that's linked to the renewal of society. Because of its young history, this is what it sort of is deeply concerned with. And to me, we really ought to pay more attention to it than we do. So, you know, all of us now have to pick up, I think, and learn to read Polish. That's our next goal.
Oh, okay. Done and done.
Yeah.
Tim, you talk about how liturgy evangelizes the world, but not necessarily through the communication of ideas. It goes deeper than that. I mean, when we think in those terms, is it simply inviting our friends to Mass, or is there something more that you have in mind?
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's something more in mind. So, of course, inviting your friends to Mass is never a bad thing to do. But when I think about liturgy and evangelization, I think of the way that liturgy creates monuments, structures, places, art, spiritualities that become grounded in history and in time that that then renew the world, that change what it means to be human. I think particularly of, you know, of the way that time is marked. So unlike the United States, Poland will celebrate, for example, Corpus Christi on Thursday. And it's a holiday there. There's a marking of time around the Eucharist, an orientation of the city around the Eucharist. Now, in the United States, that's not necessarily going to happen per se. But to really sort of the way that liturgy evangelizes, it creates ritual spaces for us to learn what it means to be a human being in the world as a Catholic. And it creates these spaces and these monuments, these churches, these processions, these liturgical rites that spill over into the city and spill over into the world. And to me, that's what I mean by the way that liturgy can evangelize.
I actually think the way that I like to point this out is because sometimes religion is seen as a docile effect on people, or it's sort of just interior. You know, in modern American life, there's a way in which, like, all things religious basically is just to make people nice. So I like to talk about the confrontational nature of liturgical time. And I mean this particularly in a Catholic social teaching sort of way, that when we do things like go out on Corpus Christi and process with the Eucharist, even if it's small, even if we're a minority of people here in a place like Des Moines, it really is sort of a confrontation of the powers and principalities that say there's this other group that believes that Jesus Christ is the Lord and King, and maybe we don't get to all take Thursday off because of historical circumstance, but here we are soldiers in this divine host, and we're going to mark this time off whether you like it or not.
Yeah, that's a nice way of saying it. Yeah, I think it offers alternative ways of being human that are actually a challenge to late modern society. And they're a challenge, and I think that they're often what people hunger for. I find that when you really engage in these sort of public, festive, particular events of Catholic life in the world, when you have this scandal of particularity, that really, in the way that you said it, that it actually does become a challenge, that there's an alternative politics that are being performed that actually can renew the world.
And I think that that's and I like what you're saying, that people love challenges. My point of this, just let me for real quick get something personal off my chest. That's why everybody doesn't like Kevin Durant, who has a soul, is because, you know, we like the idea of like the best people competing against each other because we believe that there's something about the human spirit that can bring out the best in everyone. And I think sometimes when we look at the world today, it's precisely that people think what we're lacking is a challenge. And I really think that sometimes evangelization-wise, you know, we're so worried that like people won't give us the time of day, or that they'll be maybe offended or pushed. And I think sometimes, especially with young people, that's what they want. They want someone to say, "We believe you're up to the challenge." Tim, we're getting ready to come up to the hard break, and we'll be back after 9 o'clock. Can you stick around with us and talk after the break?
I'll be here.
Fantastic. So his name, Dr. Timothy O'Malley. He is a Notre Dame Wonder Kid, genius. I forget what they officially name him.
I think it's Wonder Kid.
Wonder Kid. But he has a new book out. He's been to Poland. In his mind, it's like 2 p.m. So when we get back after the hard break, it's just going to be wonderful, folks. Stick around for the Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. We'll talk with Timothy O'Malley when we get back from the break.
If we acknowledge our sins, he is faithful and just, and will forgive our sins and cleanse us from every wrongdoing.
Helping you grow in your relationship with Jesus Christ. Iowa Catholic Radio.
At Golden Rule Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling, we understand you. I'm Bobby from Golden Rule, and we know you probably weren't planning on needing us today, but we will put your mind at ease with a prompt response because we understand how you feel. It's how the company was built. At Golden Rule Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling, we deliver respect, understanding, loyalty, expertise, and service every time you call. We have a standard, and we prove it with every job. Golden Rule, we obey the rules to live by. Online at goldenrulephc.com.
Iowa Catholic Radio, 1150 AM, 88.5 and 94.5 FM.
Thanks, Cartridge World, for supporting the Uncommon Good.
Whether you are a business, a home office, a college student, or a busy mom trying to find affordable ink and toner cartridges, Cartridge World has what you need.
515-564-7400 and online, cartridgeworld.com.
This is Father Joe Pins, Vocations Director for the Diocese of Des Moines. Pray with us.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who have trespassed against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen.
Iowa Catholic Radio, KWKY and K233BT Des Moines, and KIHS Adel. It's 9 o'clock.
We're back with the Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. We have with us Dr. Timothy O'Malley, author of many books. By many, I mean, I think two, but many more than I've written. He is the director of the Notre Dame Center of Liturgy in the McGrath Institute of Church Life, teaches the Department of Theology at the University of Notre Dame, recently just got back from a wonderful trip on the new evangelization in Poland, and we've been talking about a whole host of issues. Tim, thank you for sticking around for us.
Oh, it's a delight for me to be here.
Tim, when I first saw your new book, Born Again Catholic, the title immediately jumped out to me because I grew up as a born-again Christian, which meant that, you know, I had accepted Jesus Christ as my personal Lord and Savior and, you know, dedicated my life to serving him. So this is kind of a play on a phrase that's out there in American Christianity. Born Again Catholic, what was the inspiration for the title? Is this book about helping parents to keep their kids entertained at Mass?
Did you make a title and then say, I'll write the book later, but this title is so great, I have to do this?
No, I wish I did. Yeah, the title originally was not less exciting. This was a marketing decision by our Sunday Visitor, a well-chosen marketing decision. So But yeah, why I wrote the book is linked to one of my concerns with evangelization as it functions in the church today, which is a lot of our 18 to 25-year-olds think that what it means to be an evangelized Catholic, to be a Catholic who's committed to the person of Jesus Christ, to life with the triune God, is that all of life should be super exciting. And for years, I've worked with students on campus who say to me, you know, my spiritual life is down, I'm bored, I need to get it up, I need to get excited about it. And while I don't want to dismiss being excited, one of the things that my students lack is an ability to let prayer transform them slowly over the course of their lives. So they tend to want immediate results in prayer. They want excitement, they want energy. And the problem with a tradition like Catholicism is that it really is a tradition that your life of prayer may take 35, 40 years to really bear fruit, and it's not immediate. And that the work is this commitment to weekly and daily prayer, not to a moment of excitement. So boredom, rather than be viewed as a negative, is actually one of the ways that God can work on us as we pray, because it invites us deeper into prayer rather than to see it as something that we have to get rid of and quickly be entertained.
That's really good. In one of our classes at Mercy College here in Des Moines, we've had the students read a little bit about the life of St. Mother Teresa, and they're always struck by the fact that she labored in a very difficult context among the poorest of the poor in Calcutta during a time where she felt very distant from God and had at moments this kind of sense that God wasn't responding to her prayers. With many of the saints, you see this dark night of the soul, right? That they persevere. Prayer becomes a habitual thing that's foundational to their life and their ministry and their witness, but it's not necessarily always fireworks.
Yeah, I mean, this is what people expect in prayer. They expect some sort of total union with God every time, but it really is the slow giving over our wills in love. And Americans love sincerity. I mean, this is the part of the evangelical movement that I find very dangerous in American Catholicism, that only the act of prayer that's sincere, that's totally believed and understood and prayed, is an authentic act. But that's not Catholicism. That's works righteousness. In reality, we show up in prayer and we let God work on us. And sometimes that means we're going to experience the fruits of that prayer immediately. Sometimes it means that we're going to be dragging our kid out of mass because they're screaming at the top of their lungs because they wanted to jump in the holy water fountain and we wouldn't let them.
That sounds autobiographical.
It is a little bit.
Yeah. look, kids, I think, is a good example of this. I tell new parents all the time that, like, the reason that you tell your kids you love them a lot is because you need reminded sometimes, and that it's silly. Like, the sincerity thing, by the way, totally on point. Because people will – and this is, frankly, why we have so many problems with love, is because people think love is this just uber-sincere sentiment, right? And if I don't, with, like, 100% of my tingling synapses, feel that I love you in this moment, then I don't. And you're like, no, you know, actually, love is probably best shown where, like, everything else about you is not happy with the person, but you still love them. I think about it in terms of building cathedrals, right? That if it's like 1350 and you're contributing to building a cathedral, you're contributing to a building you know you won't see complete in your lifetime. But we, in today's world, if we're not promised that we can see, you know, cost-benefit analysis within a year, we might not feel like it's worthwhile to donate. So, it's an uphill battle to convince people that this prayer life that you start now might show progress, like, decades from now. That's really hard to convince people in our context.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, people want immediacy. And to some degree, I mean, this is where we can offer a critique to the world, I'd say, of the manner in which technology forms us. Technology does form us in this desire for immediacy, and not in a bad way. I don't mean to sort of mock it, but, you know, I'm able to order a book and receive it in 2 days. I'm able to find out what the population of a city is immediately. But prayer is different. Relationships are different. Love is different. It takes time. It takes growth. It takes a commitment to pray for the rest of our lives. And that's a different reality. And so, yeah, I think Americans in particular are very dangerously attracted to this. And I think American Catholicism, insofar as it draws on some of these evangelical movements a bit too quickly, a bit too thoughtlessly, is in danger of falling into this trap where we connect our emotions, our affections with God's activity in the world. And that's just not how Catholicism understands the affections.
Tim, you mentioned young children jumping into holy water fonts. I have to admit, for me as someone who grew up evangelical and came into the Catholic Church later in life, it's been neat to, and I don't want to make this sound too saccharine, but to see the way that my children are formed by the Catholic faith. And like you mentioned, the rich devotional life of Poland, but there's all sorts of elements of the faith, walking into a church with the smells and the artwork. You know, when we've been to really magnificent churches, my kids are just sort of overawed by the stained glass windows and the statuary. It always seems about like 2.5 years of age that they really start like gravitating towards the holy water. It seems like we can really embrace those things. You say in your book that boredom can be a kind of gift because it opens up a space for us to experience God. And I feel like at the Mass in church, there's gifts that we give to our children that you almost can't find anywhere else anymore, where there's not like a functionality to what's taking place. It really is experiencing silence and beauty to grow deeper in both faith, hope, and love.
Yeah, and that's why I talk about good boredom and bad boredom. There's the good boredom that's part of the spiritual life. And maybe it's not best to call it boredom, but it's something like our experience in the world of what I would call the mundane, and the spiritual life that gets lived according to the mundane life. But there is bad boredom, and bad boredom is the fact that we've built ugly churches and we have mediocre preaching sometimes, and our liturgical music doesn't actually inspire or bring anyone to an encounter with transcendence. It's simply trapped in a 1970s kind of spiritual vision of what prayer consists of, in which we sing the glories of ourselves again and again, and this kind of boredom needs to be gotten rid of. This is the kind of boredom that, precisely because, Bud, as you were saying, I really do think it's the case that as we enter these gorgeous churches, these spaces, that as we learn to dwell in silence, there's a mystery that takes us up in it, that this sort of sense of beauty draws us in and allows us to enter into the good boredom. And the problem is, of course, the bad boredom can serve as an obstacle to the good boredom.
This is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. We are speaking with Dr. Timothy O'Malley. Tim, what I wanted to point out is a few things when you go to your Amazon page, to your new book. First of all, you get called a young adult still. I don't know how old you are, but congrats. I don't get called a young adult anymore. Everybody's like, Bo's on the downhill slide. So they said this is a wonderful book written by a young adult, so congratulations on that. The second thing...
Feels good to be a young adult again.
The second thing is when your book is recommended with other stuff you should buy, it's Cardinal Sarah's book on silence. And I actually...
Whoa.
I mean, first of all, that's awesome. And then second, isn't it kind of, telling to you that a lot of different authors at different parts of the world for different reasons feel like the next thing that really needs to be pressed is silence? I mean, I think that's telling that an entire group of people, from Cardinal Sarah to you, other people certainly have said, the next thing that we have to let people know is that silence is necessary for a human life.
Yeah, I think it's exactly, it is telling to me. And even when I was in Poland last week, they were talking about silence, that there's this need for spaces of contemplation that serve as a real counter sign to what I see as so operative in contemporary culture, the constant movement, the constant energy, the constant noise. This silence draws us into a mystery, the mystery of life, of love, of death, of friendship. And if evangelization is going to be one thing, it's going to be human. It's going to transform what is most human in us into something that is divine. And thus, in some ways, silence allows us to return to kind of the vulnerability and the woundedness of the human condition in a way that allows us to hear God's voice sort of addressed to us. And so I'm not surprised that it's of such interest, particularly in an era in which it's so difficult to not hear not just hear a noise, but to enter into that deeper internal silence that is necessary for human happiness.
Tim, this is sort of a two-pronged question. We've been talking about the transformative power of liturgy and, you know, marking time, Corpus Christi processions, all of these beautiful things. Earlier on in the interview, you mentioned how in the American context, we got kind of bogged down in liturgy wars. And I was wondering, first of all, if you have a theory as to why that took place. But secondly, any practical advice for parishes or parish leaders to navigate those things? You know, it's great to introduce like the antiphons set to sacred music, but we all know that sometimes when you do those sorts of things, it can ruffle parishioners' feathers. Like, oh, we do get attached to the ditties that we've been singing for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I suspect that we need a fairly deep formation in order to move beyond, I'd say, some of these wars. I mean, and to a certain extent, I think some of these wars are dead, and the ditties that we've been singing have changed even during my lifetime. You know, I've been Catholic since birth, and so it's very rare that I go to my parish church and hear "Be Not Afraid" or "Glory and Praise to Our God." That actually a lot of the music that was sung has somewhat disappeared or is disappearing. So I think there are new opportunities to seize it, to seize these new kind of antiphons, a return to the antiphons. But I suspect that the real thing that's needed is a deeper formation into what the purpose of liturgy is, and that I think one of the things that we have to get over is this idea that the liturgy is simply the gathering together of the community as the first and foremost dimension of what liturgy is. Certainly it is experiencing community, I don't deny that, but that actually it's God's call of us into sort of prayer. And that means we just have to, I think one of the ways that parishes need to do this is just look at their liturgical rites in a serious way. And say, well, actually, does our celebration of the liturgy lead people to an encounter with Christ, to God? Is God, are we creating space for God to act? And I think that changes the discourse. It's not a matter of, well, are we using the right antiphons or are we singing the music of Marty Hagen? It's rather, to me, the question is, are we creating the space for an encounter with Christ using the liturgy, which is the gift of the church, which is a kind of tradition handed on to us, so that we can actually understand what's happening? And I think younger people are more open to the retrieval of some of these older practices and techniques than older generations. So I suspect that in the next 25 or 30 years, we're going to have a renewal of parish life around some of these older practices.
Yeah, Tim, what's funny is, you know, you start to talk about people encountering the tradition without necessarily maybe some of the knowledge of the wars going on. And so I know I'm talking about my kids in this, and so, you know, they go around with their curmudgeonly troglodyte father and all that he does. But it's still interesting to see what really catches on and what doesn't. So I've been addicted to an oblate. So we sing, before we go to bed, the Marian hymn for Compline. So that would be like right now, Salve Regina. But during Easter, that's Regina Caeli. And so I'm thinking this is something, well, I'm going to do it and I'll do it in front of the kids and maybe I'll be a good example, but who knows how it will stick. And then, like, every second day, they're all singing Regina Caeli in the car and asking, like, Dad, can we sing the, like, my three-year-old was calling it Resurrexit, you know, one of the words in there. And it's you know, just the simple tone. And so it starts to be funny, you know, people act like kids are like, oh, well, we got to dumb it down for kids. They're not going to get it. I saw a meme that goes, your kid knows how to say Tyrannosaurus Rex, which is technically two Greek words. They can say words that will surprise you if you don't truncate and sell them short. And we talked about challenging youth earlier in the show, and I got a text again from Justin White here at the Diocese, who's just got hired on for young adult ministries and youth. And that's what he said. He agrees 1,000,000,000% that everything he sees about young people is that they're tired of not being challenged in things like the faith. So I think sometimes it's a matter of We who supposedly wield the reins of the show, selling people short. I really do think people like to be thrown into the deep end sometime, as long as they think there's a lifeguard on duty and that we shouldn't undersell them.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to, I always had a professor that would say, you never teach to the bottom 90% of the class. You teach to the upper 10%. And the reason that is not that there's sort of 90% Catholic and then 10% Catholic, but you teach at the highest level because it raises people's possibilities. And I think that's right. If you teach people the difficulties of Latin, which, by the way, isn't that difficult when you think about how little Latin that one would need to know in order to pray the Mass well, and to pray some of the introits and to pray the propers of the Mass, it's not that difficult. And more importantly, if you really challenge people spiritually to really enter into the depths of prayer, then they'll follow up on it. It's one of the reasons to me why pilgrimage is so popular in Europe right now. Everyone I was talking to in Poland was on their way to the Camino. And one of the reasons is because it presents a challenge, a physical challenge, but also one that's connected to a spiritual challenge. And it really is a stunning, I think, image of what faith needs to be then in this late modern world, this opportunity to offer a challenge that is public, that wooes, that attracts, that's beautiful, but is challenging. And people want a challenge. They don't want the same old, same old.
So in thinking about the conversations that you have with young adults there at Notre Dame, I don't know, when I watch Notre Dame football on television and I'm...
Yeah, do you watch it with like some way to avoid watching it? It's quite bad.
No, I was going to say, full disclosure, I'm usually rooting against you guys. When I came into the church, I had people tell me, you got to root for Notre Dame now, but it hasn't caught on yet.
Right, that was the one promise I made to my Baptist family, is that I became Catholic, but I won't root for Notre Dame. That was the terms of the agreement.
But during the broadcast, you see Touchdown Jesus and the Golden Dome, and it looks like the pinnacle of Catholic culture in the United States, just like Notre Dame's campus. How's the liturgical life there? You know, you talk about these conversations that you have with students, and in class, do you have them share sort of their experience growing up and in different parishes and now how they experience the liturgy today?
Yeah, our students are reflective, I'd say, of the rest of American Catholic life that I find. Some of them are super religious, and the devotional life and liturgical life here reflects the kind of diversity of American Catholicism as a whole. So some might do dorm masses, but we also would have as many students who are attracted to singing in Latin who join our sort of 10 a.m. mass choir and really want the full liturgical tradition of the church in their prayer. I would say the hardest challenge for many of our students is really sort of getting over all the cultural obstacles that were set up for them to practice faith. They have all sorts of assumptions about the church. They think that the church doesn't believe in science, that the church doesn't believe in, that the church's teaching on marriage is offensive. No one has taught them. No one has sort of formed them to see the particularities. And so it's true in the liturgy too, that they grew up in often youth ministry experiences that were designed to raise their emotions all the time, and they're confused why when they go to Mass here that there isn't a drum set. And so in that sense, there's a lot of work to be done here, as anywhere, to sort of form them into the particularities of the tradition. When they find them, they actually are really open to them. They're not hostile. Like most young adults, they're not hostile. But they're also, this will sound worse than it is, but they're ignorant. They don't know what the traditions are. And when they learn them, they're actually kind of persuaded by them.
So, Tim, we're getting to the end of interview time. But the last thing I want to bring up, because I think, especially with what you were saying in response to Bud's question, is so important for people to get at, is if you start to confuse spirituality with emotions, all of those other problems, like thinking, for instance, that Catholics must hate science, for instance, it really, to me, stems from that. Because what we do when we think of that is we think of the word Catholic as an adjective that's just one more consumer choice. You know, you like the Chicago Cubs and you buy Chicago Cubs shirts. Well, I like the Catholic Church, so I buy Catholic Church shirts. And all of this is at the emotive level. It's what makes me excited or gives me some sort of momentary sentimental pleasure. But instead of this sort of adjective Catholicism or this, you know, consumer Catholicism, what we have to talk about gets back, I think, to what's pervading everything you said in this interview. The Catholicism is holistic is not even the correct word. It's a universe. To be Catholic is to say, we walk on this same planet, but I live in a different universe than you do. And that challenge is not a mean or derogatory challenge. It's the sort of challenge that I think opens up those spaces in life. When someone sees another individual and goes, my God, that person lives on a different plane, though he walks right before me. And not because I'm holy or great or awesome, but just because I'm that different. That's what we have to try to get at in evangelization, it seems to me, is not Catholic as an adjective, but Catholic as a universe.
Yeah, so it's well said. It really is. And in some ways, this returns to Bud's great research interest in Newman. It's the creation of a world that exists. Because precisely as a cosmos, as we live into these particularities of this tradition and this religious life, what ends up happening to us is that world, we're formed to see that world as existing. Because it does exist, but sin has made us not see it. And as we learn to dwell in that cosmos, we see the world for what it is, as created by God, as renewed by God, as destined in the end for God.
Well, Tim, it's been fantastic to get to talk to you. And again, we're really thankful that you've only been back on native soil pretty much less than a day, and you still made time to talk to us. Like I said, Dr. Timothy O'Malley does all sorts of wonderful things. Liturgy, the McGrath Institute at Notre Dame, the Church Life Journal, which you can see online, his books, his newest one, Bored Again Catholic, that you can get on Amazon.com. But most of all, a friend of the show that we're going to have back sometime. Tim, thanks for being our second hour and 10-minute show interview. It has been well worth the time. And Godspeed, and hopefully jet lag will soon cease for you, brother.
Oh, thanks so much. And thanks for all the work you do. It's a delight to be with you.
Okay. God bless. Hey, guys, stay around. A minute with commercials. We'll be back with The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. Stick around.
Iowa Catholic Radio is looking for smiling volunteers. Would you like to be a part of our Christ-centered environment to spread the word of God? Iowa Catholic Radio hosts over a dozen events where you could answer the phones, register event attendees, maybe help at the state fair. There's lots to do. Please join the Iowa Catholic Radio family of volunteers and give us a call at 515-223-1150. Thank you.
Hi, this is Marty McDonald with McDonald Imaging Solutions, and it's been my joy to support Iowa Catholic Radio by printing the famous Pope on a Stick fans used at the Iowa State Fair. We also printed the Our Catholic Schools Rock folders. McDonald Imaging Solutions is a family-owned business with over 1.5 million promotional items to choose from. We specialize in custom labeling, marketing, and corporate apparel. I personally help any business, big or small, to build their brand. Online at McDonaldImagingSolutions.com. 276-2587.
Hey friends, John Leonetti here, and I want to thank Plaza Dental Group for underwriting my show. Plaza Dental Group makes their patients feel comfortable and right at home, like one of the family. Catholic-owned, they offer cosmetic dentistry and implants, six-month smiles, and Invisalign, an alternative to traditional braces, along with mercury-free dentistry. Plaza Dental Group, comfortable dentistry. 515-344-3523. Online at dmsmiles.com.
Thank you, Pekin Insurance, for your support of the Dowling Catholic Boys Baseball Broadcast. Confused about insurance? Pekin Insurance, provided by Rob McCarger at Ligori Insurance Agency in Des Moines, can help you find affordable auto, home, business, or life insurance coverage. Pekin Insurance provides beyond the expected services and coverage. Ligori Insurance Agency, 4320 and a half Southwest 9th Street, Des Moines, Iowa, 515-285-0370. Online at ligori-insurance.com.
Back with The Uncommon Good, Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. Man, that's one of those interviews precisely why we went to the hour and 10 minutes, Bud.
Yeah, I would really recommend checking out Dr. O'Malley's book, Bored Again Catholic, How the Mass Could Save Your Life. Like you said, there's a lot there, so I'm glad we had the extra window of time.
I think it's I'm probably alighting upon this too much, but I think Tim O'Malley will always be young in people's minds. He's such a you guys all need to meet him in person. He's such a youthful figure, and sometimes when I'm feeling like I'm 40 years older than I actually am, I just think of Tim O'Malley, and my spirits pick back up. Same thing with Deacon Tony. Every time I'm feeling old, I'm like, Deacon Tony is going to live forever. He's spry, has a heart of a young man.
Well, you look at me, and then you feel there's hope for me. You know?
Deacon, do you have any tips? Is there an elixir that you're taking right now or anything?
No special chemicals or anything like that. I gave those up years ago.
That's good.
But the treatment program went well.
That's
so
good, yeah. I think that spin class is what people are going to say, and I'm going to politely refuse. I don't think there's spin bikes that weigh enough to support me.
You know, I did instruct spin this morning, and then Mondays and Fridays as well, 5:10 in the morning. So
there you go. So just to, like, you know, bring it full circle, you can be doing that while listening to the Bible, right? Or is it that's at 5:30?
5 o'clock.
5 o'clock. So yeah. You listen to the Bible,
and then it goes into the rosary. It can be a very spiritual.
It can be a very spiritual, spiritual uplifting and physically exhausting 5 o'clock hour.
We may be on to something. Old Testament spin.
Old Testament.
That could get intense.
Spin with us now. Yeah, to
we were reading through 1st and 2nd Samuel, and just the amount of walking that they did to go fight some battle. I mean, yeah, they keep talking about all these places, that, and they marched from whatever to whatever, and I'm looking at that, I'm like, that's like 100 miles. They marched 100 miles, and then they fought, and there was no Advil. No Advil to be had.
They were probably thinner than us.
They were probably a little bit thinner than us.
But we're also,
safe to say,
we're tackling the book of Revelation right now.
Yes.
And that's
a lot of walking in that one. The exercise Armageddon is going to be a strenuous battle, it seems to me.
Sounds that way.
And the birds get a lot of exercises. I don't think you can read the Bible too much, but you start reading it enough and you start really noticing something, and like the book of Revelation like wants to really always tell you what birds are up to.
Yeah, birds figure centrally, also God's justice.
Yes.
So I mean, when you get this idea, sometimes, like, it goes back to what's called the Marcionite heresy. And Marcion was a person who thought the God of the Old Testament and the God revealed in Jesus Christ were so different that they must not be the same. And so thought that the canon of scripture should consist of only part of the New Testament. You get to the book of Revelation, of course, it's a book of great hope for believers, but it certainly points to the fact that, you know, God does not take sin lightly.
Right.
That, you know, justice is God's justice and mercy kiss. They're not separable.
Yeah, it's not going to be good. If you ever stop and find yourself being likened to a 10-headed beast with 7 crowns or 7-headed beast with 10 crowns, you're doing things wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like the state of the city address. You have, you know, it's like Rome or Babylon, and they're on their desk. They're like, so guys, what's everybody saying of us? And they're like, well, some people think that we're a 7-headed beast with 10 crowns. Then you go like, we might need to change our policies.
Let's rethink things.
Let's rethink some of the issues and how we approach them.
Well, Revelation coalesces well with our conversation today, a very liturgical book.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's bowls of incense and choirs singing holy, holy, holy before the throne of God. What other things jumped out to me? You know, the blowing of trumpets. I mean, so much of it reminds me of the Mass, and I think St. John probably had a mystical experience while celebrating Mass, and that was the inspiration for the book. But I really liked Tim O'Malley's comments today about good boredom.
Mm.
And I feel like as parents, I don't know how you tackle this, Bo, but we've kind of changed our strategy where early on in being Catholic, sometimes we'd try to distract the kids during Mass, whether that was like a coloring book or even, you know, Mass booklets can be a good thing, but I think there is something to be said for showing up to Mass and letting the family take it all in, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I think that part of it depends on, like, each individual kid, and I mean, I think that's what everybody, anytime you hear any advice that goes, like, every kid be taught the same way, that's when you know it's not true. But I think that, very much more quickly, by the time we've had the fourth kid, is we're like, you know what, if they're not, you know, tracking with things, that's okay. And when I go sing at the school, I take Finian with me. And I don't think there's a lot better that a three-year-old can do than to be looking up and seeing a men's schola where it's, you know, adult men who feel like they should take time on Sunday, you know, to sing the propers, to sing the antiphons like yeah. Tim was talking about. And the fact that they don't necessarily, quote-unquote, get all of it, I think starts missing the point somehow. And I guess that's something we didn't get into either, is maybe when you're listening to the radio and you're hearing, you know, three dudes that have spent a lot of time reading books, you could say, like, well, that's easy for you guys to say that Latin's easy or things like this, you know, but what about me? I try to tell people, like, so first of all, people think I know way more Latin than I do, so I really fake it well, evidently. I don't like when we're like, so if we go to the Latin mass where it's all in Latin, like I don't track with the priest what they're saying the entire yeah. time. And when I started going to that mass, I used to bring the English Latin translation and I would just sit there and read, but I actually don't anymore. And for me, it's really important to get back to just being a part of the mass and being able to understand what's going on without necessarily acting like my job is to listen to every single word and sort of judge it in live time, to learn to pray with the priest. And so I think sometimes people really miss this point. Is yeah. like if they want either mental titillation or like emotional, you know, stirring of their emotions. But, you know, be still and know that I am the Lord. I think that the mass in some ways, and you go back to Revelations talking about this, certainly, like what's going on in heaven, the elders are bowing, they're casting their crowns, all these things. But St. John just seems to be in awe of it.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that maybe that's what we're missing, is that the mass is not just the activity of us, but that there is an eternal mass going on at all times, ministered by the saints and the angels. And part of our duty is to just be in awe of it, like St. John at Patmos.
Well, you came back to this theme a couple times in the interview, but the idea of human beings wanting to be challenged, wanting a challenge. And I know the tradition that we grew up in, part of church was sending your kids to the nursery.
Right.
So when we became Catholic, there was this new experience of like, well, everyone's at the liturgy together. And that became a very good, real challenge for our family. Like, oh, I have to navigate, you know, being with my 1.5-year-old during the liturgy. But it really goes back to, I guess this is what you're driving at, is our theology of the liturgy. This is a representation of the sacrifice of Calvary. So, of course, everyone should be there. You don't send off the little ones.
Right. No, and I think that that is a really interesting way to put it, to talk about this in the wider Catholic social teaching and why this has to do with the common good, is it's not that Mass is the thing that we Catholics, because we have the adjective Catholic in front of our name, like you got to go do to be a part of the members club.
Yeah.
It's actually the other way around. It's like God's finger touching earth.
Yeah.
And the sort of graces flow vertically downward to all of us. And why wouldn't you want to be there? Why wouldn't you want your kid to be there even if they're not quote unquote getting it? You know, if I could, if you think about this in like as pagan of term as possible, if you were a Greek and you knew Zeus was on Mount Olympus, wouldn't you just go and have your kid touch a rock from Mount Olympus? But we don't believe in something like a fairy tale. We believe in something so much more great, so much more true, so much more powerful, that God will do this. But not only does that, he replicates this everywhere that we come to call him in Mass. Why wouldn't you take your kid to just be present for that sort of grace?
The first couple times I went to Eastern Rite liturgies, it sort of surprised me. Because part of the congregation would come in quite late, mm-hmm. and people would be moving about throughout. And I know some of that goes back to sometimes cultural sort of habits and things like that. But I got the sense, being at Eastern Rite liturgies, that they have this very deep realization that God is going to act, and what God is doing at the altar, you know, like you said, the finger of God touching earth, that's going to take place whoever
right.
is there or not there. It's really, and that's the sort of, once we recognize that, that I think will be what transforms even our music and our art. If we recognize that liturgy is primarily oriented towards the adoration of God, community will flow out of that, of course. But that's the primary direction.
I think a great example of this, and just to invite everybody, Thursday, so tomorrow at 4:30, we're going to have Mass at Mercy College. I mean, technically, Corpus Christi is Sunday, but sort of in a secondary honor of Corpus Christi, we're having Mass that Thursday, and that's actually going to be the first Mass where we will have the Eucharist installed at the Tabernacle at Mercy College, so really wonderful. But what I tell people is whether one person shows up to that Mass or 500, that Mass is the Mass with the same power. And so when we talk to people, it's not a matter like, if you don't come, it won't be Mass. I'm like, look, that's God's glory, and man, you're missing out if you don't come. Not like if you don't come, God's missing out. It's the opposite way. So we invite you to do that, but I invite you to think about that in a cultural community way, that God wants to reign over all of us and is inviting us to be his subjects. So just a few things before we hit the road again. First of all, thanks everybody for listening. Again, second hour and 10-minute show. I think it's a great blessing to be able to have that opportunity to talk that long. So thank you for listening. Thank you for people who chimed in. We just want to make an appeal. I know sometimes it might seem like, because of how wonderful the people we have working here, like Deacon Tony, professionals, A-grade professionals, that we must be making loads of money, but we're not, bud. We're a nonprofit, and we will take your money, not because we're greedy, but because we want you to be a part of this great ministry that is Iowa Catholic Radio. So we'd love to have you be a part of our family by donating. Bible in a Year, 5 a.m. We have the Man Up event that's coming up June 24th. You can go online to look at that. The Rosary coming up next. We just want to say thank you for giving us the opportunity to come into your homes and be a part of your lives. This is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr. May Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in your hearts, your families, city, state, country, and the entire world. God bless. We'll see you next week.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr is heard Wednesdays at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. on Iowa Catholic Radio and on the official Iowa Catholic Radio app.
Iowa Catholic Radio is looking for smiling volunteers.